When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Hello, so they say absence makes the heart grow fonder. And as the awfully written meme puts it this week, I miss the football so very much. Check what you copy and paste, people. It makes you look like a poorly translated foreign cartoon. But anyway, in a parallel world, it would be an international break. So we may not have podded anyway. So in effect, we're coming at you with a bonus podcast this week. Small silver linings, eh? I'm joined today by Anthony and Nick. First off, Nick, back refreshed after being consumed by Mother's Day festivities last weekend. You're right, mate. How are you going?
Surviving this isolation, currently managing a child who doesn't sleep very well, gets up at 4 a.m. every night, so a bit of a challenge there, but got my home office now set up in the spare room, so got some privacy at least during the working week. Just to say who we are, as you know, we are Who Got The Assist. You can find us on Twitter at WGTA_FPL for Tom, at WGTA_Nick, and at FPL Stag. We're also on Instagram if you want to follow us there, WGTA.FPL. So what's on the pod for this week, Anthony?
Another week down in quarantine here as well in the Belgian lockdown. They've reinforced measures and extended the measures, but they haven't tightened up the rules anymore, which is nice. But this week on the pod, obviously, no football to talk about, surprise, surprise. But nevertheless, there are a little bit of information that's come out from the Premier League, which we will discuss briefly. And then what we're going to do is move on to a game of stick or twist, talking about the rules and the setup of FPL as it is now, and just talking maybe briefly about what we change about it as well. And then we also have a bunch of listeners' questions to sift through. So we thank you for those and looking forward to going through them.
Yeah, thanks for those. Just a preface before we move on. Obviously, in this poll, we're not going to speculate about COVID. A huge shout out to key workers and people putting their lives on the line, basically, so we can be safe. And we hope this podcast is taken with the spirit in which it is made, which is simply to hopefully make a small positive difference for you all. The main thing this week is talking about that stick or twist game. Just to update you guys on our thoughts on what's been announced, which is unsurprisingly that initial April the 30th deadline is looking like it's going to be extended. It doesn't seem feasible at this point that we'll come back in what would have been game week 36 in the FPL calendar.
Yeah, so what we've had since we last podded is a joint statement from the Premier League, the EFL and the PFA together, and effectively what those organizations did was agree to work together to mitigate the economic impact of this current suspension on professional football in England. And they've agreed to work together to arrive at shared solutions, whatever those may be, which is quite interesting, but doesn't really tell us much more than they're thinking about trying to be cohesive with how they approach things. Maybe also of interest was a report from Ornstein in The Athletic, and having already previously reported that all of the Premier League clubs had agreed 100% to finish the season, that was only about 10 days ago. Already there's growing feelings within the clubs that this season perhaps should be null and voided, and that the whole thing should be just played from scratch at the start of next year. But he does point out that for that to go ahead, they need a huge percentage of the clubs to agree to this. It'd be 14 out of 20. And with that in mind, it seems unlikely that that would happen. Even Harry Kane has joined in on the action now, and he says that the season should be finished by June if it is to go that way. So we've learned nothing, but at least we've more to ponder, and I guess maybe the reality of how long we're going to be going without any football except Belarus and Nicaragua to enjoy at the moment.
Obviously, a lot of people watching the Minsk derby over the weekend, which was, I think, recorded with English commentary for the first time ever. So a few people getting their football fix however they can, it seems. Yeah, also worth highlighting, since I think we last did our pod, that the leagues below the national leagues have declared their seasons null and void. So some movement there in terms of some of the lower leagues, but still very early days in terms of what happens with the Premier League. Obviously, it's, you know, huge financial contracts potentially up in the air if they did go that way. And, you know, there'd be potential legal cases from the likes of Leeds and West Brom as well if their promotion chances are denied.
In the face of everything, I mean, the players and the PFA especially have been saying that the players, even if it's behind closed doors, are not going to be playing if there are any safety issues, which is completely fair enough. I guess I can kind of see why. I mean, Harry Kane said today that June has to be the date that the season gets cut off no matter what. And the closer and closer we get, and we did speak about it last week, so I'm not going to retread it, Stag's idea of a summer jamboree of FPL may well still occur. And the president of Belarus actually has just said that he's not going to cancel anything, and that vodka and saunas are going to beat the coronavirus. So there you go. We at least have the Belarusian Premier League to look forward to. I wonder if they've got a BFPL, Belarusian Fantasy Premier League.
Imagine. Is Alexander Hleb still playing? Imagine. He is a former professional footballer. How disappointing. It would have been nice. I saw Alexander Hleb play for Belarus against Ireland in a pre-Euro 2016 friendly in Cork. They beat us 1-0. It was terrible. That's my Alexander Hleb story.
I swear every Ireland game is either 1-0 or 1-1.
Yeah, it's pretty much it. And usually our goal tends to come after going behind. Play poorly, go behind, and then just start lobbing it in and get big Shane Duffy or somebody else maybe to put it in.
Poor old Shane Duffy in isolation with Lewis Dunk still. Right, okay, let's move on to the stick or twist game then. And what we've done for this, we've looked at key features of the Fantasy Premier League and broken them down into three sort of umbrella groups: position, scoring, and economy. And we're going to speak about a couple of things and just basically come to a collective decision, or, you know, a minority report style 2-1 on whether they should stick or twist with a few things. So the first thing, I guess, is positions. And I guess what's really interesting, perhaps just to muse on, is could they be more complex with these? Because, you know, the idea of having a goalkeeper, defender, midfielder and striker feels very passé, doesn't it? It feels very Championship Manager 2001 sort of vintage. And now you've got the ascent of offensive mids. You've got wing-backs becoming such a huge part of the game. Can we still even put these guys on the same pedestal? Can you kind of be comparing your Gary Cahill to your TAAs? What do you guys reckon? Should the positions stay as they are? I mean, the advantages, they are very simple, but I guess it doesn't reflect the modern game, does it?
Positions definitely, I think, could do with a little bit of work, but they don't need to overcomplicate it either, as far as I'm concerned. I think if you're to start splitting defenders into wing-backs and centre-backs, I think that's going to get quite difficult and arbitrary with some players. Whereas I think in midfield especially, that's where kind of things descend into farce at times, where you could well have a team with seven strikers playing because of, you know, having a bunch of midfielders and then your strikers on the pitch. And that's kind of pointless. But the reason why they're doing that, of course, is to try and like keep premium players in the midfield who might be playing as forwards, take Mo Salah or something, who's going to have a heat map very similar to any striker, maybe with a bit of a side on it. But for me, I think what you can do is if you just split midfield in two, you have not necessarily defensive mids in the DM Gareth Barry type role that you're thinking of, but if you just have midfielders who are defensive and midfielders who are attacking, just a general split there to try and just give a bit of variation so that we don't have to like lob all the Salahs of this world into the strikers and make that a mess, but still find a way then maybe to reflect those positions in the scoring as well.
I think it's challenging. Obviously, with Sky Fantasy Football, you do have those wingers are classified as forwards. So the likes of Raheem Sterling or Mo Salah, Sadio Mane, they're all classified as forwards. And that kind of, you know, adds a bit more, you know, gravitas to that forward role. Because I think the problem is when you look at the selections within the forward, you're kind of very, very limited in terms of the stock that you have available. I mean, this season we've got the likes of Marcus Rashford and Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, but even next season, because of the way they've been playing in their positions, their clubs, they're potentially going to be classified as midfielders. So essentially what you're kind of left with is sort of your Harry Kanes and not much else, to be honest, in terms of who you pick for that forward position. And I think with the midfielders, it's a good point, you know, because you've got essentially you've got your likes of Kevin De Bruyne, for instance, who would be a classical midfielder, you know, other players like David Silva maybe as well. And, you know, Dele Alli or Christian Eriksen when he was at Spurs would be real midfielders. And then you've got your attacking wingers, your Sterlings, your Salahs, your Manes, which could potentially be classified in a separate category. But I do think that when you start trying to separate the midfield slots like that, it does add too much complexity to the game. And we do have this problem, obviously, that, you know, in modern day football, you know, as you said, defence, midfield, attack is very kind of 2001. But you can go down a road where you start saying, right, defensive midfielders, maybe they deserve to get, you know, a couple of clean sheet points just to kind of make them an option, you know, so you could bring in the likes of Fabinho or Kante into the game a little bit more. But then, as I think we talked about one of our previous pods, about how Kante under Sarri was playing a more attacking role. And then does he get reclassified during the season, or how do you play it? Because I think in modern day football, we see so much positional change with players, and you always have out of position players in FPL every season, that it's going to be more and more the case if you start adding more formations to the game.
Do we start to question whether we need three striker slots? And maybe if there's an extra midfield slot, is that the solution to our problem? You create a bigger conundrum in terms of initially selection and then obviously who to play week in, week out in midfield. You know, at the moment we find that we sometimes have sacrificial lambs in the forward line just because. Maybe this would be the way to get around that.
Yeah, it certainly makes sense to do it that way, to say, okay, let's just go with six midfielders, as you say, and then two strikers. I mean, as Nick just said, like if the likes of Marcus Rashford get reclassified, then the stock is going to be so thin, isn't it, going forward? It's untrue. But I guess what is different about it too is the fact that football does change over time. You may well find that like a forward-heavy 4-4-2 system of two pure strikers may become the formation that's in vogue by next year. So I guess that's the reason why they've kept it as it is for so long. You've got your five midfielders, your five defenders, and just your three strikers. That said, I mean, I think there are some instances where they do just game it effectively in terms of how they allocate player positions. So I mentioned Mo Salah, I mentioned Sadio Mane. In terms of, you know, starting positions last year, for example, Mo Salah was number nine. Like, no dispute on quite a few occasions. Alexis Sanchez in the past was a striker for Arsenal, no dispute, but remained a midfielder just because there wasn't kind of the premium options in midfield to cover if he was moved out. And I think that's probably the case this year as well with Salah and Mane, because if they'd have been moved out in midfield and put into the striker slots, then I think it may have unbalanced the game a little bit. So I guess there's an element of balancing with this. Like, the more I think about it, the more we've spoken about it, it kind of feels like this is like the least worst solution. Although we want some deeper sense of complexity, maybe the positions isn't quite the place to do it. So maybe for me, possessions are a stick. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think I'd agree with you. I think we didn't even cover the defence, to be honest. And, you know, the situation of Chelsea's defence, for instance, when they were playing 5-3-2 with Alonso virtually attacking winger, virtually forwards more than defending. And then Azpilicueta, is he a central defender because he's part of that back three, or is he a right back, or what does he do? So, yeah, I think it's a stick for me as well.
Yeah, and I think when you really put it through, Tom, I think least worst solution is probably the best way to characterise the positions as they are right now. And we're going to have the erratic out of position players, but they do make the game interesting. So for me, in this case, it's a stick.
Yeah, making it overly complicated may be just a bit much, and you may just descend into a bit of a strange situation. All right, so the next bit, if we're saying stick for positions, is scoring. So this breaks down to a few kind of key areas. The biggest part of the crapshoot is holding the gun for the captaincy armband. And I guess, you know, we have one fixed captain, don't we, every weekend, and basically all of our hopes and dreams for that game week do rely on that captain more often than not. Like, if you do get your captain off, you're more than likely to get a green arrow, unless it's like one of those where there's an overwhelming herd on one guy. There's other options out there. So Sky, for example, have a revolving captain. Every game day you can make a captaincy pick, and I think a couple of the tournaments were a bit like that. So captaincy first then, do we think that should stay as it is? Could that possibly be changed?
So for me, I'm definitely pro this kind of revolving captaincy idea. I've really enjoyed it in the World Cup and Euro formats. I feel like it's the way that maybe people like us who spend a bit too much time watching games and tracking fantasy can benefit and get ahead of the herd. And it's also a way of just keeping people engaged. And maybe also just when your weekend is almost defined by, or your game week is almost defined by how well your captain does, as Tom alluded to, especially when the templates take hold. It's quite harsh, and just that you live and die by your captaincy so often, and maybe to allow you to play kind of a game of almost 21, where it's like, do you stick or twist on the captaincy that you've had on a Friday, on a Saturday, on a Sunday? That would, I think, make it more interesting, and so I'd be pro it.
Yeah, I do think that it would add an additional complexity to the game for sure. I mean, it would be a sweeping change, and obviously we do tend to find that the captaincy very often is a crapshoot. You could have a really good week, but if your captain scores two and your mate's captain gets a brace, then you're essentially 10 points behind him, and that can really, really impact your game week. And I think having the option to pick multiple captains over the course of a game week and revolve it would definitely help the more informed managers, and it can help with planning and add an extra complexity to the game when you think about the sort of the Friday night and the Monday night fixtures. When you're making your transfers, you can start to think, actually, I'm going to bring in this guy. He might be a Bournemouth player, but he's got a Friday night fixture, and that really adds an extra dynamic, and adds debate to the game. Do you target players based on fixtures, or the timing of the fixtures and things like that? And I think that added complexity, and it's not it wouldn't be a major change. It would just be a slight change. I think would go down well by and large with the community as well, to be honest. So I'd be relatively pro that change, I think.
I don't know, because I've played Sky for the last couple of seasons. It feels like a very Sky thing, and importing that into FPL, although that's a subjective thing to say, it doesn't feel quite right. Rationally, if I look at it though, there are lots of positives. Like as Nick said, there's an extra dynamic. Would it change the game? Maybe. Like, we'd probably see more hits, wouldn't we, as people kind of ramp up each week and kind of think, oh, if I get this guy and I've got the Friday, this guy and I've got the Sunday, this guy and I've got Monday Night Football. And I think people might be a bit less cautious. You know, over the last few years, there's been a prevailing tailwind that, you've got to be cautious. Like, so FPL General and Matthew Jones have been kind of putting that into the popular psyche. You've got to be careful. You've got to roll your transfers. You've got to be really considered. So maybe that would change and the game would be more exciting because people would be taking more and more hits every week. Like, I'm guessing if that stayed the same, but there were more captains every weekend, people would be a bit more cavalier. And the other big positive, psychological, isn't it? Because if all goes wrong with your captain, especially if you've taken a gamble that week, it can be a ruined weekend to some extent. I mean, I'm not saying you're going to be bawling your eyes out or anything like that, but it's going to piss you off. So maybe the fact that you've got kind of your safety net of at least one other captain could really help a lot of people psychologically if their captain does blow up in their face.
And I think just one other thing that we haven't mentioned in this is just that I think it would mean that it would unlock the ability to captain attackers more frequently. Because let's say if you can, often because of the way the TV game works, a lot of the big games are scheduled for Sunday. If you have a Friday night fixture and Saturday fixtures, the 3 p.m, etc., you could quite often, let's say, you could captain a defender. And then you kind of, if you think there's going to be a clean sheet in the Friday fixture, for example, or in one of the Saturday ones, okay, pick captain your defender there, bank your 12, and then you can kind of sit and reflect and look at how the game week has panned out for you so far. How have your differentials done? How is the meta doing? And then you can kind of play your own gamble within. And I just think that extra variation in the game would be better too.
For me, that would be a twist in terms of the changes of the rules. I think you sound like a twist as well, Stag.
Yeah.
A bit closer to on the fence, but seem like you might be leaning towards a twist.
I don't know. I like the fact that it's high stakes with the captaincy. I think that's a unique part of FPL. I can see the downside psychologically that people do get so wrapped up in it. And if you do get your captain wrong, it can screw up your game week. I do like the fact that it would change the game, but would it change FPL from being FPL? Like, would it then become a different game entirely? That would be what I'd be unsure about. I mean, the other thing you can do with captaincy, which I'm sure a few people would be yelling out right now, if they're in distance left, that is, probably would be saying, well, you can get rid of captaincy altogether, just don't have a captain. Because that removes a lot of the variance, right? Like, a lot of people do get annoyed at that every week, but they just say, because some people have just captained and they've gotten lucky with that. I suppose that could be another consideration, but it sounds like from both your faces about maybe a no.
It's just for me, if you're talking about changing the captaincies so that it doesn't, let's say, define how game weeks go, to just remove the captaincy entirely seems like a far more radical suggestion than to just allow the captaincy to shift around from player to player. And I just think that it would just keep people more engaged. It's going back to that thing we were talking about, how FPL is a marketing tool at the end of the day. And I think building engagement is the key. And this would mean that even Monday night fixtures might become interesting. Plenty of game weeks have happened this year where, let's say, the big two players of the game week that people were banking on to score as captains failed. Let's say it was Raheem Sterling pretty much for most of the first 10 game weeks, aside from the very first ones. And let's say if Mo Salah or something blanked as well, then suddenly like there was a complete crapshoot with the captaincy. And there were so often weeks where all of us came on here, every other podcast came on, and it was just like, oh, 4 points from the captain.
I definitely wouldn't be in favour of taking away the captainship completely. I think removing that variance will just create more of a template setup that we're all stuck with, and all our scores being very, very similar. So that would, I would be pretty anti that idea.
Okay. So in terms of the captain then, I think it would stick in terms of it still being there, but I'm not sure. It sounds like you would both twist and I'd stick in terms of how it is set up. So Minority Report rules, it sounds like that's a twist from WGTA, although I'm not convinced. All right, next thing then, bonus points. The eternal question, why didn't X get bonus? I only care because I own him. If I didn't own him, I wouldn't give a... But yeah, bonus points are one of those arcane things which come up every year, annoy people no end, and the ongoing debates annoy me no end. But worth mentioning, I think, just because at the moment they seem a bit bizarre to a lot of people. They're not very transparent in how they're reported, as I've talked about ad nauseam, and perhaps they could be redeployed, reutilized to do other things. For example, I argued a couple of years ago that defensive midfielders could be brought into the game using bonus points. So you could get something like, if you're a midfielder, at the moment clearances, blocks, interceptions are all lumped together as part of one bonus point sort of allocation. If you split them out for midfielders and said you get one BPS, a BPS point makes up the bonus points, which then give you that number, which the top three then get bonus. If they're all split and players, you know, like Kante, Destroyers, were able to get those points allocated uniquely, then maybe you get the situation where you have a defensive midfielder in the running for two or three bonus points every game. So you have a player who costs 5.0 or something like that, who was in the running to get 4 or 5 points every game. Like, that would make things really interesting, because then you'd be like, well, okay, you can spend loads of money on your players, like, you know, Martial, Ali, something like that. Yeah, you're going to play, I'm going to pay that 8 million for Richarlison, or I could pay 5.5 for a Gbamin who's likely to get me 4 or 5 points every game week. Like, that creates an intriguing sort of difference, doesn't it? And maybe it could be a nice way to overhaul bonus points and bring a lot of defensive midfielders into the game. So solve the problem that we spoke about earlier in terms of the positioning. Maybe a bit geeky though. What do you guys reckon?
Yeah, I think I'm going to be largely echoing what you say, Thomas. I really would like to get those DMs into the game further. And rather than kind of proposing a radical overhaul that almost kind of goes into minute detail about how many tackles and blocks and, you know, what pass completion rate that every midfielder has, and trying to bring that into the game, I think there's enough to research already without doing that sort of thing to us. But if we know that those defensive midfielders, as you say, are in the running for 3, 4, 5 points, depending, or even have their own separate bonus point system for those players that they can kind of pick them up if they meet certain thresholds or something, I'm kind of throwing that out as a random idea, it'd be just a way to get them in. But I think as well, it's just to give greater clarity into how those points are being calculated. Okay, yes, we know how they're calculated and like what goes into the metric, but what we don't know often is the numbers that are actually being in the multipliers to get the kind of the quantum to figure out who actually gets the bonus points at the end of the day. That causes excessive confusion and too many questions for people like us. But there's probably a rights issue there to do with the sharing of stats and giving away too much, and that's probably the reason why they haven't done it yet. But at the same time, I think there'd be a lot to benefit if we could just see the numbers.
Having that extra transparency behind the numbers would be appreciated by most FPL managers. As you know, the bonus point system is very contentious, and it's always prone to debate in the community as to why certain players got the points. And I think sometimes that, you know, certain forwards, so Salah types also, sometimes I think are marked down a little bit too heavily because of a big chance missed. And you look at some of those big chances missed, and often it's almost like a solo effort that created the chance in the first place, and you can get marked quite heavily down off the back of that. And I do feel like that needs a little bit of work as well. I feel like some of the forwards that take plenty of pot shots, like Salah, sometimes, unfortunately, fall out of the bonus points, and it's not too fair, to be honest, I think.
No, I think bonus points definitely an area that could be revamped, could be looked at again. Obviously, it's a little bit complicated, which given the FPL's MO of just making things very, very simple, might be a bit of an issue. But I can't imagine it being that difficult, can it? Just to say, you know what? Ndidi is going to be in the running for a couple of extra points every week. why not? I mean, that doesn't seem very difficult to do, and let the nerds like us understand the full impact of it, but let the casual crowd kind of think, okay, well, these guys are maybe worth looking at again. And finally, in this area, the chips. So, Stag, I don't know if you were you playing in the time before chips when it was just the wild cards?
I'm a 10-year veteran of FPL.
10-year veteran. So you were playing when you were six. Okay, great. But in general, then I think the chips. A lot of people have not liked them. So they're, you know, a bit gimmicky, adding that kind of extra random element, aren't they, to some extent? And obviously, when it all goes wrong, it can really go wrong. Leroy Sané captaincy last year. Sadio Mane this year.
Oh my God! I remember and flashbacks.
What do you guys think about chips then? Worth keeping? Could they be altered? Like, you know, Elite Syrian, I think they do a few different sorts of ones.
Yeah, I really like chips, to be honest. I like the ones we've got. I think that the one they got rid of, All Out Attack, because it was a bit rubbish. I kind of, you know, understood why they replaced it. And I think adding the free hits chip impacted in terms of how we managed the blanks and the doubles and added that extra dynamic, which I really like. And I think, you know, they play a key element in terms of our double game week planning and when best to use the chips. And, you know, it's a really interesting discussion point that we have over the course of the season. So potentially you could look to add more chips to the game, you know, maybe one or two more. You know, I'm all for more complexities to the game and more variables and more things for us to think about, more things for us to debate about to prevent it from being too formulaic. So in terms of chips, I'm very pro.
I'm behind that as well, and I've said for a while that I think what I'd like is a menu of chips, curly fries, sweet potato. No, we'll talk about potatoes later on. But what I would like is basically the idea that you say you've got a menu of six you could possibly use, but you can only use three during the course of the season. That would be awesome, because people would then kind of go for it and they'd make their own decisions, and you'd have, like, you know, the template way of doing it, I suppose, the Ben Krellin way. And other people like, I know I'm using my, you know, part of the bus chip actually this week, and you'd have so much different, so much more variation how the season goes. Yeah, you'd be putting things over the luck a little bit, but I think that'd be really interesting. I suspect it would probably be a bit too complicated for FPL to explain, but I think it would be really, really interesting too. It would be interesting if you did have a few more tools in game, because a lot of the time we talk about at the start of every season how important the start is. If you do fall behind, it can be really, really hard to make up that gap. A lot of the time, if you have done very well at the start of the season, that can basically see you through for the rest of the year. And if you are in a little bit further behind, maybe kind of having some different chips that could possibly help you that may not be applicable to people who are miles in front could be really, really useful.
I'm largely pro chips. I've never, I think, benefited from chips all that much. I think every time I've deployed them, something has gone horribly wrong somewhere along the way. But nevertheless, I would still be pro the chips. I actually like your menu idea, Tom. I don't think I've ever heard that one proposed before. But even putting in something like a bit of a red herring kind of option there, like let's say you just get a free extra 20 points in a given game week at some point, would be in there in that menu of chips for me. I think it would just cause so much confusion, so much like extra tactical nous would need to go into things. There'd be more fixture analysis that goes with it. I really like the idea of the chips. At the end of the day, it's like, it's just so hard to get them right, isn't it? So I guess coming back to our stick and twist on this whole entire area of scoring, first of all, I guess the bonus points, folks, I think lots of us seem to be thinking twist in some sort of way.
Got to be twisted. It shouldn't stay as it is, even though I suspect it probably will.
I think I'm in favour of a twist there.
Easy. And then finally, chips. It sounds like we like, again, it's like with captaincy, we like the idea of them. And if they were as they are, then cool, we'll stick with that. But there is room for a twist if needed. Right. And then finally, the economy. Very exciting area to speak about. But in terms of this one, you know, price changes being a key part of things. The price is rising and fall daily. It's the first thing a lot of people look at in the morning while the season's properly going. And, you know, it's just dumped in a black box, isn't it? We've got absolutely no idea how it's done. The FPL don't really mention the mechanics behind it. It's left to algorithms to try to figure out how it works, what happens with it. And you've got a very strange situation where you've got an external company and they fix and monitor the market. Like, should this be changed? Should this be more transparent one? And should it still happen daily that you have price changes?
Yeah, I know we've sort of debated this on the pod sort of significantly before, but I think even this season in particular, it's really felt like there's been some real flaws in terms of the structuring and timing of the price changes, and they have felt very random in terms of like some of the sales and just not seeing a player drop or a player unexpectedly drop. And even, you know, that you mentioned the likes of Fantasy Football Fix or FPL Statistics, who have been, I feel like in previous seasons, they have been a reliable indicator in terms of tracking the prediction and who's going to be rising, who's going to be falling. But this season in particular, it felt like, you know, they haven't been able to track it as well as they have in previous seasons. And you know, there's been sudden price changes that just felt like, surely there's no algorithm behind it. It's almost just someone deciding as and when, oh, I've decided Anthony Martial is going to drop tonight, and, you know, holding it off, you know, breaking the algorithm essentially. Because, you know, you look at some of the falls, for instance, within a week, and you think that player really should have fallen. When you look at, you know, his ownership and the amount of sales, and it's just not happened. And it's kind of been a little bit unexplainable. So it's definitely an area where FPL could be improved dramatically if they, you know, just provided like almost bonus points, but even more extreme, you know, in terms of some actual clarity in terms of why players are falling and why players are rising in the way that they do.
For a game that is effectively set out to try and be as simple and understandable as possible for any even casual fan to get into, the economy thing is just poorly explained in general. So many people, we often get tweets about it, don't understand why they've sold a player and now they have to buy them back for more than they paid the last time, and why do they have one number on their team page and another number on the actual transfers. They could do so much more with it if they actually kind of opened up the algorithm to us and just showed us like how the forecasts, even just like, are players going to fall, are they going to rise, what day, even just show progress sort of thing, and we could work the rest of it out ourselves, or you maybe add a skill element to it. But as it is right now, I just think it's far too confusing. It just allows for tinfoil hat theories to kind of grow about, oh, well, why didn't that player fall, or oh, why didn't they rise? I like the actual idea of having the value changes. I just don't know how it's implemented.
Yeah, those like tinfoil hat theories that Anthony just mentioned are definitely true. Like, you'll see people going, oh, why hasn't he risen? Oh, it's because Mark Sovens owns him. It seems very kind of like, you know what? It could be so easily fixed if you just told us how this works. Like, I just don't see why it has to be so complicated. I really don't. Like, I like the idea of it being there. I think the idea that prices change over the course of the season, absolutely fine. That's cool because it reflects behavior. It reflects kind of people doing things and, you know, the risk versus reward of making an early transfer versus waiting to the end of the week. I like that. I like the fact that throughout the course of the week, you've got something to think about. And I think that they like that from a marketing perspective because you're logging in, you're looking at it, you're doing X, Y, and Z, you're engaging with the game. So I think it probably should stay as it is. But I think it just needs to be explained. Like, how the hell are they coming to this number? It's kind of a cousin of bonus points in that respect, isn't it? So yeah, it sounds like the economy then, just to round off the section, is a stick, really. I mean, we like the fact that it's there on Sky. You don't have the price changes. It just makes it a different game. I think that that's a unique feature of FPL, that you've got that economy running, although it does seem a bit fast call at the moment that it's still running during the soft period. All right, let's take a break there, guys, then, and move on to the questions.
Who got the assist?
All right, so let's move on to the next section, and it's things making us smile. So it's our new section we're going to do each week in place of a dad watch and such like. It's basically a meme watch, meme updates. So last week we spoke about the big lasagna, we spoke about the guy who got the A or B, stuff like that. This week there are a few new entries, so the time spent looking at exponential graphs between January and March going upwards is definitely one that's caught my eye this week. Another one is, I hate them, but, you know, if you're a football person, that meme where you have to put a photo of something to the football without comment. What I particularly love about that, though, as you may have kind of intuited from the very top of the podcast, was that it was written by somebody for whom clearly English isn't their first language. So at the very end, it said, missing the football so very much. And it just looked hilarious. You had loads of people like FPL General, for example, being caught out not reading what it said. It just looked so stupid because it just clearly just wasn't written by somebody who speaks English very well. Miss the football so very much. Like, why?
I was comparing it there off mic to when football managers say in this moment. It's kind of a thing that's come from the Spanish and Portuguese speaking managers, but now you hear the likes of even Graham Potter saying, and Eddie Howe as well, I've heard do it there. In this moment, we're struggling, and you're like, Graham, like, get a grip, man.
Yeah. Eddie Howe saying, in this moment, all the players are injured, and then they're all fine on the next day. Yeah. elsewhere, you've got your tag five people stuff coming alive again. So remember when we were younger, people were just like, oh, if you don't tag five people in this, you're going to die. Now we're saying, all right, so name five jobs that you've had, tag five people as well. There's a question later on actually about the jobs that I said that I'd done, but I'm going to stop tagging other people whenever I get tagged now. I think the chain needs to stop with me. Yeah, that's a wider meta joke there. And until tomorrow, something that Stag, as a member of the young generation, can probably explain, because I'd actually no idea what this is.
So yeah, I had to explain it on Twitter as well, with because it was causing quite a lot of confusion when I posted a picture of my avatar with "until tomorrow" written on it, and people were, "Tomorrow? What's on tomorrow?" I got like three DMs about it and quite a few messages as well off to the side. But basically, "Until Tomorrow" was an Instagram thing, which I presume probably started in the States and then came across. And the idea was that someone posts up an Instagram, usually it's an embarrassing one, and it should be an embarrassing one, with the caption "until tomorrow," no context, nothing else, no tagging people, no nothing, if done correctly. And basically anybody that liked your Instagram, which said "until tomorrow" with you looking like a state, you had to DM them on Instagram and say, "Oh, you've been caught out. This is like this chain thing, and you must now put up a post for 24 hours with the caption "until tomorrow" of you looking in a state," basically. And so it would be deleted tomorrow. So until tomorrow, you get to see this picture. And that was pretty popular. It was great.
You didn't post a picture of you in a state, though. It was just your avatar. So
that was the joke was that, you know, like nothing changes when you're beyond an avatar. Us. Yeah, beyond it just went
so
whoosh.
So meta. It's whoosh. Oh, all you young folk. Oh, that reminds me then. There's quite a few going around Facebook as well where it says, oh, you know, like someone's mum has four children. So it's north, east, west. What's the other kid called? I lost to this. And the answer is obviously someone, because that's where the thing is. In the fridge, there is three items. What do you open first? You have to open the fridge first. And people just getting that wrong. Oh, my God.
It's all these people that are coming back to the internet that haven't used it in about 15 years because they actually had social lives, and now they're confined to their homes. And all those chain mails are coming back from when they were teenagers, perhaps.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, speaking of teenagers, there's one great one that we were giggling at with, well, you know, last week it was lasagna, this week it was a woman on Zoom who decides to put her show her video when she goes to the dog while on a group call, which is absolutely brilliant. Just Google Zoom fail and you'll soon see this one. Are there any more memes out there? Stag is our resident meme expert. I'm sure you may have seen a few more.
Yeah, I know. I've got loads of memes and internet content that have been making me smile. So just like the uptake in video phone calls, I think that's been pretty great. It's been smiling a lot at that. One thing that I've really been enjoying is a bit of a trend on Instagram. The footballers have moved on from keepy uppies with toilet roll, and now it seems to be a lot of Spanish players trolling, usually their partners, with this troll where you fill a glass of water and you hold it up to the roof, and so it's touching the roof, and get someone to stand on the chair and hold it, and then all you do is you just leave them there with the chair just stuck, and they can't take the chair away themselves without drenching themselves. And I don't know, it's pretty funny. So the person is just stranded with a glass pressed against the roof. There was a nice little video as well that I think if you're looking for a smile, you should look at. There was a poor girl somewhere in Ireland, and her birthday party was cancelled. So all of her friends, their parents drove the kids around, and they all came across the front of her house, like in their cars, in like a procession with their little happy birthday signs and like shouting and waving and stuff. It was some pretty heartwarming stuff there.
Yeah, I saw the paramedic who was given a round of applause as she was going to work. That warmed the soul, didn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, really, really cool. And obviously, the big clap on Thursday for the NHS workers was really cool as well. Okay, people were whooping and mashing horns here and things like that. It was really, really nice. Right, in the community, another shout out to Champman FPL. I did a quick video for them not very long ago at Fantasy Champman, but I think the window has closed, but I'm looking forward to that one. And also, we really do a commercial message, but Tom and Stefan, two guys who you may know, Tom especially, is Ron Weasley, who's into Planet FPL doing their Would You Rather question. Their company Beer Nuts is obviously struggling a little bit at the moment because they work with bars and all the bars are shut. So they teamed up with a company called Siren Craft Brew to bring you the Ultimate Isolation Beer Care Package to keep you entertained while at home. So you get a few beers, plus some of their signature nuts, plus a pub quiz, some beer mats, some card games, a beer pong set, and a chalice as well. You can find that on beernuts.co.uk, and the FPL community get a discount as well. That's FPL5 at the checkout. We don't normally do adverts, but because it's a small independent business, why not, basically. And plus, they're sending me a Nick some beer. Sorry, Stag. So yeah, we'll definitely do that for them.
What? Set them up.
Oh, yeah. They don't ship to Belgium, so
it's good to support you know, the FPL community through these trying times. And yeah, definitely worth checking that out, guys.
Anyway, let's move on to the questions. So the first question this week is the FPL Twitter Community Awards. Late Rise asked us to name and fame a few people. So there's four things here. Let's start with the first one. Your most and least favorite FPL managers. Now, Stag, how did you interpret it this week?
So yeah, last week we had a question in and it was about who your favorite FPL manager was. And I took that as a manager in the community. And I think I went with Chief at the time. And now here we are this week. And I was like, I've learned from my lesson. He was actually asking about actual managers. So I had decided that Eddie Howe was my least favorite manager from an FPL context, because his press conferences are absolutely clear as mud. And there's just so many surprises. And like, look, it might not be as relevant this year, but the return of Ryan Fraser will come. And so, yeah, it's pretty frustrating, guys. Like, I never can interpret these questions correctly.
Right, okay. So while you're thinking about those, Nick and I will give our answers. So least favourite FPL managers, let's start with negative. I don't actually have an individual here, but I have that guy who shows up the one week they do well, doesn't say anything otherwise. So you'll see there's a few individuals over FPL Twitter. Everybody's seen them on the timelines. Some weeks just like, oh, 85 points plus this week, massive green arrow up to blah, 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 K. And then they'll be gone for a few weeks, and then they'll post again when they do well, and then they'll disappear again. So yeah, those are my least favorite FPL managers, because I just think it's really, really dumb.
Yeah, I wasn't going to name it a least favorite FPL manager, because that would be mean. That's unfair. But yeah, I think I agree with your point there. And you know, their favorite emoji is always the arm flex emoji as well, isn't it? It has to be accompanied by the arm flex emoji, doesn't it? But in terms of my favorite FPL manager, I think ultimately, it sounds a bit sick fancy pants, but it has to be Mark Southerns, doesn't it? He's the ultimate FPL celebrity. He's the brains behind Fancy Football Scout, and he was perhaps the first pundit that many of us listened to in terms of following for FPL advice. He's no longer sadly involved in the community, but he's sort of playing FPL quietly on the side and always doing very, very well. And I think that adds a little bit to the enigma and the reputation of this guy. He's just an absolutely fantastic manager as well, not afraid of a maverick decision or crazy minus eight outlandish punt. And you know, his record speaks for himself. So I think to call out anyone as sort of my favourite FPL manager would have to be Mark, I think.
Yeah, well, I think that's definitely it. Like, the man, the mystery, the legend, Mark Southern, has to be the best, because the fact is that there's an extra twist of excitement with Mark, and there was always that capacity to take that minus eight and for it to come off. You know, like things like picking out, Sol Bamba, wasn't it? Being the guy who was getting on the end of the Morrison flick-ons and getting those points in, getting that guy on the minus four and getting loads of points from that. Stuff like that, Mark was great at doing. I don't know, obviously it's sad that he's no longer part of it, but I agree with everything Nick said there. Absolutely excellent.
I've given this some thought, and I'm not, obviously, like you guys, I'm not going to attract a lawsuit here for slandering somebody with the least favourite. But my favourite FPL manager, I'm going to give a shout out from a community point of view to a fellow Irishman, to FPL King, who unfortunately the Irish FPL meetup wasn't able to go ahead due to the corona thing, but I wasn't going to be able to attend. So selfishly, I'm delighted that I might have a chance of actually attending this meetup when it does actually come. And King also puts together the week in FPL, like one page, like front page of a newspaper type thing, which kind of brings the whole community together, satirizes what's going on. It usually tends to be pretty tongue-in-cheek. I like it a lot.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I really like that as well. And hopefully I'll be able to actually go to the Dublin meetup. I did lose a little bit of money, I think, actually, from cancelling the accommodation, but no bother. I think I'll whenever we can, we'll meet again. I definitely will. Next thing is the funniest person in the community. So I guess there's one obvious answer for a lot of people here. And I think, Nick, he was the one who you'd written down.
Yeah, I think FPL Partridge obviously deserves a shout out here for his entertaining videos and brought lots of humour, lots of fun and entertainment, even being retweeted by the likes of Alan Sugar. I think he's done a Downfall one, which is just the Adolf Hitler film, is very, very good. He's done many Narcos videos, which are very, very funny spoofs of them, FPL breakdowns, basically. I think his season, particularly this season, he's had a bit of a shocking season, which has rendered itself very useful for humour, and he's done the Apprentice one as well. And I think these videos are very, very funny. He always brings a laugh out for people, and long may it continue.
Yeah, maybe kind of going down that line of FPL self-flagellation for poor results. Hindu Monkey comes to mind as a pretty funny tweeter. Every week he's sacking himself, and he's just constantly kind of talking in like a third person board speak about his season. I've found that pretty funny throughout the season. And then maybe Tom, our guest last week, was pretty funny too, wasn't he?
Yeah, Adam's pretty good, isn't he? No, a Hindi Monkey did come to mind, but I'm in a group chat with him as well, and he does like often like leave in a hissy fit and then like, send me a message a couple of days later going, can you let me back in the group, please, mate? So yeah, definitely high on my list. Lucy Hynett as well. I think sometimes she'll just write some of the most like acid, sarcastic things on what people have written. I think that they're always brilliant. I always find them hilarious. Adam, at times he can be absolutely hilarious, and other times he can be very, very cringeworthy indeed. So there you go. Right, next one, pod other than your own that you really like. Well, I mean, on the way to the airport when I was leaving for Australia, I posted the podcast I was going to listen to. I'm inundated with why don't you listen to this? My God, you've left out these guys. I can't believe it. And I was just like, oh my God. So a bit of a minefield. I'm going to think about how I diplomatically phrase this and throw this to you guys. This is meant to be an FPL thing. So is there an FPL one you can zero in on without annoying others?
Nope. No, there. Yeah, absolutely. I do really enjoy the Always Cheating podcast, and I enjoy the Three Amigos podcast as well for all the banter.
Cool. So I think I'll name two other podcasts just so we're fair and even to everyone. But I think I feel like what the Planet FPL guys have done this season has just been incredibly impressive in terms of just getting and rolling out pods just every single day. I think just this sheer amount of effort that James has put in particular this season has just been amazing. And I feel like those guys definitely deserve a call out for all the work that they've put in there. I'd also mention the FPL Surgery Lads. I feel like that's one of my favourite podcasts. I feel like it's always, you know, the amount of detail that they go into is very impressive, and hope they continue on as well, because I know that James Drury's been thinking about this being the final season for the podcast, so we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, I mean, those are my two actually, Nick, for sure. I like the fact that we do like all genuinely get on in person as well, and we meet and do try to obviously we'll support each other, which is really cool. All right, and the final bit is the member of the community you'd quarantine yourself with. Not sure I want to quarantine myself with any, to be honest. Sarah's already putting up a bit, Nick is already putting up a bit for Nick, but any answers that spring to mind here, people? I'm tempted to say no one except myself.
Yeah, I'd be tempted as well. I think if I was quarantined with Tom, I think we'd probably just end up driving each other completely crazy by the end of it. So, I have no idea, to be honest. I think any answer I give would be a little bit weird as well. So.
I have a constructive answer, and it'd be FPL Viper, purely because he's putting together these great fitness routines, and I think he'd be just a very practical person to like motivate you and actually somewhat stay in shape. Exactly. So yeah, we'll give a shout out to Vipes there for his very good videos on keeping fit in the home.
Absolutely. In some ways, aren't we all in quarantine with each other anyway? God, so sappy. It's a total Adam Pritchard. Right, okay, moving on to the big question. How do we like our potatoes? Rank your favourite style of potatoes as FPL Goops. Chips, jackets, roasties. How do we do them? I'm not going to rank them because there are too many ways to say potato. Maybe should we say what our favourites are? And what I don't know. How do we take on this question? As a potato expert, Anthony, what do you think?
Wow, thanks. So for me, it's definitely got to be my number one is in the summer when the golden wonders and other cursed pinks and things kind of come through in June, July, August time. You get these really beautiful flowery potatoes. You boil them with the skins on and all, and then just put a bit of butter in and mash them, have them with a bit of lamb or something. Very few things that are better than those potatoes in the middle of the summer, the fresh ones.
That's interesting. Still working off the season, so I just have no idea when it's good. You just buy them from the supermarket and see what happens. But surprising actually, I was never really into potatoes when I was growing up. I was a big fan of crisps and French fried, so the more deep fried, the better for me. But I think, you know, your boiled potatoes, bogged down and nothing to them, probably be bottom of the list. So, I'd probably rank the chips probably the most unhealthy of them all first.
Yeah, the curly fries, chips, triple fried chips. Yeah. Nick, I mean, can't say chips. That means like anything. Like McCain oven chips.
Talking about curly fries just reminded me of my uni days, where basically like every single meal I would eat would be some sort of like oven cooked meal with a side of curly fries and maybe a bit of lettuce and cucumber if I'm feeling on the side. So. These days I haven't had curly fries in a a number of years now. Thought it'd be cheesy chips at 3 a.m. half drunk as well.
Yeah, maybe a Smiley's or something like that. For me, it's got to be roast potatoes. You cut them into little bits, parboil them first until you can stick a fork almost through them. There's still a little bit of resistance. And then you strain off, keep the water for your gravy afterwards, right? It's part of a roast dinner. And then you put the potato onto a baking tray on maybe papyrus paper. Back in my meat eating days, I'd shove goose fat onto the potatoes and do some salt over them, some sea salt, so the big kind of chunky bits, and some sage and maybe some rosemary as well. Smush it all around. All the potatoes were completely covered in this goose fat and also all the herbs and the salt, and then roast them like that. My God, that's perfect. Absolutely amazing. Although the vegan version, if you're interested, is just use olive oil and use sea salt. And they come out vaguely the same, but they're not as crispy as with the goose fat, but there you go. So hopefully that answered your question, Goops. Right, next one. Keeping with these kind of big hitting things, the socioeconomic impacts of COVID or coronavirus. One for Nick, because Nick's the finance expert here. Morpheus Fire asks, how long we reckon the recession post-COVID will last? Nick, take it away.
I really have not got an answer for this question. I don't know what you want me to say.
Well, I said the man across numbers. The market forces.
Following the statistic.
If it was socioeconomic impacts, positives that might come from this or something, you could waft about it. But it's like, when's this going to end? I don't know.
I've got no idea, man. And we say at the start, we're not going to talk about this. So.
Yeah, I'm not a single sausage. That's what someone of my employees asked me. It was like, so when are we going back to work? I was like, I don't know. Stupidest question.
Boss, when are we going back to work?
He writes me that. I was like, well, when do you think we'll be back in work? I'm like, well, I don't know. We're following government advice now, you know.
Like, what? It doesn't matter what I can think.
Yeah. Why don't you go back in work and see if it's safe?
I just can't see how it's going to, you know, improve over the next few months. This is going to be a long-term thing for the whole entire world. So it could be a couple of years that, you know, the socio-economic impacts go on for, but who knows?
Yeah, I think it's safe to say this is probably going to be a long-term thing, isn't it? Like, after we come to some sense of normality, there's going to have to be some stimulus to get people buying stuff again, and maybe some sort of VAT holiday or something like that, just to kind of help things along. You're seeing investors pull out, buy solid stuff like gold, or just taking their money and sticking it under their bed at the moment, given how the stock markets are looking. So there's going to have to be some stimulus in order for things to improve. But yeah, no, I think it's just going to be when stability returns, whenever that is. People don't like unstable time. Volatility doesn't seem to be the friend of stability. Well, it never is it?
Am I really to come in on this?
You don't have to if you want to.
I won't. Yeah, I'll leave it.
Cool. All right. The next bit, remain indoors. Lucy Heiner asks, what's been good about being stuck indoors?
Memes and just watching videos on Twitter and stuff has pretty much been keeping me going. Like, I've actually found that so far I've been so, like, I'm still working and I'm kept so busy that I haven't actually got anywhere near going through all the plans that I had to watch movies and read books and do things. Like, I kind of find like I'm still just operating on a day-to-day basis. You know, I get my 1 hour run in the day, I get the shopping done every few days, and I just work for hours, and I feel that just the days pass pretty quickly. So it hasn't actually been that bad being stuck indoors.
Well, I think many of us sort of gamers and nerds have been used to lives indoors anyway, so it's not too bad for us. But I think ultimately for me, I think not having to do my daily commute has been appreciated. Typically lose about 2 to 3 hours a day on that, and it does mean that I get a little bit more sleep in the morning, which is gratefully received considering I've got a son who doesn't sleep at night. So having that extra hour in the morning is very much appreciated. But yeah, being stuck indoors, it's not as bad as it's, you know, it could be a lot worse. I saw actually an article on the BBC about how we would have all coped if this happened in 2005 compared to 2020. And, you know, those were the days where we didn't have smartphones, YouTube didn't exist or was in its infancy. And, you know, we didn't have streaming services like Netflix out there and social media websites like Facebook, Twitter. It would have been a very, very different world. So I think we're quite lucky, to be honest, that we're having this crisis in a world where we're all interconnected and we can all talk very easily like we are right now, which wasn't around in 2005.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, all we do normally is we go from one building, the one we live in, to another building where we work and then back again. Like, that's basically, for the majority of the week, what we've lost. So in some ways, I mean, being stuck indoors, it's okay. Human beings, as James Crotch said this week, when it comes down to it, ultimately just dogs, aren't we? We need to go out for a run every now and again. And what's been good about being indoors? get more time gaming, basically, as Nick said earlier. All of the nerds and geeks are loving this. If I was doing what I used to do when I was at uni, I'd be loving this even more, but unfortunately I don't do that anymore. Right, move on to the next question then. Vase. If your sergeant asks, we pronounce that word vase, vase, or vase? Is there another way of pronouncing? I don't know. How do we pronounce this?
It's a vase to me.
Vase.
Vase. Okay, good. V-A-R-S.
Do you actually pronounce it vase?
No, I don't. I don't know why I said it that way.
Yeah, what about the very nice small bread thing that causes issue? I don't want to like prejudice your answers.
Can you type it?
Can I type it? Yes, I can type it. Hang on.
Sorry. I don't know what you mean.
Oh, scone.
See, I don't even know. I say both. I say scone, probably.
Oh, it's because there's the magic E at the end, so it makes the O sound.
Yeah, I'm very much a hardcore scone.
I wouldn't say con instead of cone, no, that's the thing, but I still feel like it's a scone. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's just one of those things, isn't it? But I just try to abide by the magic E makes the vowel in the middle say its name. Next one. All right. Psycho 11. So Benny Blanco, a key worker. Shout out to you, Benny. Great work. Asks us to put together a Psycho 11. So yeah, quite an interesting one. I've put some starters for 10 on here. So in goal, it has to be Jens Lehmann, doesn't it? Stuart Pearce, because Psycho. And Chopper Harris, your relative, Nick, famously just took everyone out, didn't the old Ron? No matter who you were, just went straight for your ankles. Yeah, I'm sure he tells you the story of the family gatherings. Right, in the midfield...
In the midfield, I was just expecting you to go for Roy Keane, and I was going to have to like have an impassioned defence of Roy Keane for the next say, 10 minutes.
For ruining Alf Inge Haaland's.
Mad, isn't he?
No, folks, no.
What is he? Yeah.
He's a hero.
Well, even after he stormed out of the Ireland 2002 World Cup after a bust up with.
He was totally right. He was totally right. things weren't good enough, and he has standards, and he held Ireland to account on that. Fair play to him.
By not playing at all. Okay.
All right. So I think let's go with Minority Report here rules and put
Whoa.
In.
I will not stand over this.
But let's be fair. He's not a normal guy. He has as much empathy as Donald Trump does, doesn't he?
How about that?
No, not true at all. He's very good around the dressing room sometimes.
Yeah. I'm sure his many successes since being a manager have shown that his man management abilities are incredible.
Sunderland promoted 2005, 2006, was it? What a year.
Anyway, Maradona when he was drugged up, probably in the midfield. There's another one there.
Yeah, this is the thing. It's like I've grown up in an era where football has been kind of like toned down a bit, and it's like, you know, you don't really make it in the professional era unless you've been somewhat controlled through.
Probably a bit of a hard question again.
Unless we've sat down and really thought this through, I don't know if it's going to fly.
Yeah. Just have Costa and Suarez.
Fairness, Balotelli was the easy shout here.
Yeah, that's true. I don't think basically we're going to be able to put together a proper team here for you, Benny, just because we're too snowflakey, effectively. But I'm sure you can probably guess the sort of people that we're thinking about. I had Nat Lofthouse as well up front. The story of him scoring a goal while he was unconscious. No? Okay, never mind. All right, next question. My past job. Remember that five jobs meme? So Rich FPL mentions that one of my old jobs was a receptionist at a sexual health clinic. Do I have any funny stories? Yeah, I do. Going in the explicit category again here, lads. So people used to phone up, and when they phoned up, a lot of people don't, it just doesn't clock that they're not going to be speaking to a doctor or nurse straight away. So a lot of the time, I just got the most disgusting things asked of me. Like, obviously, clinically, yeah, of course you should be asking the NHS, but like, I was an 18-year-old boy, like, sitting on reception, and I was fielding calls, like, have you heard of bacterial vaginosis? What are the symptoms? And what happens when your clit is green? And I had to try to be professional about that. But yeah, it wasn't very good. And I think also, you know, getting stuff. Okay, I'm not going to go into it too much. Yeah, there are quite a few funny stories, but I think they're probably a bit too gross for this particular podcast. Speaking of gross things, Nick, that beard's looking good. Hindi Monkey Phil asks if any hair experimentation is occurring. So, not for me, I don't think, at the moment. Not for you, Anthony, but Nick, you're looking like you're about to go hunting in the woods. Any experimentation going on?
Yeah, I am growing my beard out, as you mentioned, Tom. It has actually been longer than this. I have gone crazy, but normally I fall into some sort of peer pressure from work colleagues saying I must shave it and tidy and sort myself out, which I then tend to follow. So obviously not being at work, I thought, screw it. I'm just going to see what happens, grow it out as long as possible, end up looking like Gimli or something like that. I was tempted just to shave my head as well and just look like a complete nutter, but I'm not sure if I'm going to go down that road this time around. But yeah, a bit of a hair experimentation. Why not? You know, you only live once. I know you guys probably would struggle to grow a beard like this, so maybe that's why it's not hacking your sides. But you can't get haircuts at the moment, so no action.
And that's actually part of my issue, Nick, is that you can't get a haircut here in Belgium at the moment. So I'm starting, this is already starting to get a little bit too like a mop on my head. I was approaching the need for a haircut as the lockdown began. My issue is that like I get to having a mullet really quickly if I don't control the hair, and I look like, I look like a 70s or 80s cross-country runner or tennis player or something. Like very rapidly the hair starts to curl and things. So I don't know there's a bit of a trend going on now of just going fully bald, and I'm genuinely tempted by it. Well, I've never done it before.
I saw that the Hazard brothers, Aidan, Torgan and Killian, have all shaved their heads, and so has Stephen Graham, who got his son to do it, and John Richardson was tweeting about how he's thinking about doing it. So yeah, why not join that clan and go for the full shave and film it on Twitter for lols as well.
Yeah, exactly. I'd change, like, put a few like mohawks in and stuff along the way as it like goes towards them being fully cleared of hair to be a good tweet.
Yeah, I might have to as well. Might have to do it. I'll see if I can get my other half to cut my hair and see if she can just have a go, because frankly, who's going to see it apart from her anyway? I'm glad. So like on the week that I go back to work, I did get my hair cut that week because it was getting a bit ridiculous. I hadn't cut it for 2 months. But if we're in until May, then I think that I'm going to start looking like a mushroom because my hair just grows outwards, which is really, really annoying. Maybe I will shave it again. I don't really like shaving my hair, but if it needs to be done, it needs to be done. So yeah, no experimentation. And as Nick has pointed out, neither of us can probably grow a beard. So right, next question. Tom's trilogy. So Tom Campbell with a few questions. He asks me, how will you personally remember Arsene Wenger's time at Arsenal? A game of two halves, obviously. For Nick, what's your preferred starting formation and style of play on watching Spurs? And Anthony, your best on-field partnerships you remember? So I'll go first. I think, as I said, game two halves, when Wenger came in, obviously revolutionised how the game was played and looked at in the UK, or in England, I suppose I should probably say. The ideas of nutrition, things like that, completely changed things. Chew to win, famously, spending your time chewing your food, giving those kind of marginal gains. I think Martin Keown initially was complaining about those, but obviously saw the benefits because his career was extended all the way to the invincible season. But I think after that, it became a study in not exactly being a specialist in failure, but just putting too much faith in really rubbish players, players like Danielson, players like Almunia being in goal, not buying a defensive midfielder, like really clear and obvious blind spots, the things that happen when you're in a club for too long. I think those things did kick in. And as much as, the initial start point was great, I think by the end, it was probably the best that he did go, or at least bring someone else in and move upstairs, something like that. Obviously, you wouldn't have shot Bambi and got rid of him 2002, 2003, 2004 or something like that. But after a while...
A banter club.
Yeah, exactly. Things just changed, didn't they?
So for me, the best on-field partnerships that I remember, I always like Steven Gerrard and Fernando Torres were this absolutely fantastic combination, kind of around the time that I started to really, really get into football. I kind of considered the 05 FA Cup final as a starting point for me, with kind of watching football continually and following things on the teletext or CFAX for you guys in England. And kind of move from there. So Gerard Torres would be one. I think the impact that Virgil van Dijk has had on his centre-back partners, especially at Liverpool, has been something to behold. And so it's not so much an on-field partnership as what van Dijk can do to somebody else, but I found that incredibly compelling to watch. From an FPL point of view, it's hard to forget what Yaya Toure and Sergio Aguero used to do together for years upon years. There was obviously the real Yaya glory year especially, but yeah, a fantastic pairing. Thinking a little bit more laterally and maybe outside of just singular partnerships, I would think back to the real kind of, as far as I was concerned, glory era for Ferguson's, I guess, third wave at United. And that was the team with Rooney, Ronaldo, Tevez and Chicharito all firing on all cylinders together, I guess with Nani kind of supplementing from the wing as well. That was a sight to behold, the way all four of them kind of contributed and did their bit for what was a scintillating team to watch. And just, I guess it was a time for me where I was really into football. I was at the Old Trafford twice while that team were active, and it was just great to watch.
I think for me is that I'm probably coloured by FPL a little bit, but Suarez and Sturridge, there's probably one that comes to mind. Vardy and Mahrez. No, the original SAS was Sutton and Shearer, actually.
You're so right.
Blackburn Rovers in 1994, 95 when they won the title. Mm-hmm. I think I always think of a few of those.
Your call is often talked about as well as something, but nothing I was around for. So
we need to watch some of the highlight reels of those. Some of the connection between those two.
Yeah, United's treble season, the whole thing, there's a summary of it as available on YouTube. I'm going to sit down and watch it one of the days. I think I watched it when I was about 10, but I'll do it again.
It is the perfect opportunity to catch up on your football history, really. This sort of period. This is a very rare fallow period when no football's actually happening and you can just like research into the past.
Oh, and for Nick watching Spurs.
So it won't surprise anyone that I prefer sort of an attacking possession-based style of play, and I'm certainly not like a fan of some of the more recent setups that you've seen recently with the sort of five centre-backs against Burnley with some sort of park-the-bus mentality. And I'm obviously not a fan of that. I think in terms of formations, I've always been sort of my football manager setup, sort of 4-2-3-1 setup. So, you know, you'd have like the wingers being sort of Son and Moura or Lamela on the ring. And historically, that might have been a sort of Bale and Van der Vaart, Lennon sort of setup with a Jermaine Defoe type character in the number nine position, or Harry Kane, obviously. Now, I think going forward, it'd probably be like Dele Alli sort of playing sort of behind as a supporting striker, which has shown his best form in playing. I think, unfortunately, with Spurs at the moment, there are some serious upgrades that need to be made in a number of positions. I think, ultimately, your fullbacks is a key area which we need to look at. I think previously, we gone are the days where we had Kyle Walker and Danny Rose in their prime, or even Kieran Trippier. And you know, the fullbacks really need upgrading, and I think in the midfield too as well. I think there's a future end on Ndombele as a box-to-box midfielder and some form of defensive midfielder supporting him, maybe, or even a Lo Celso type character. But maybe Gernandez as Eric Dier's rubbish now. But I think, yeah, to answer Tom's question, yeah, I think 4-2-3-1 would be my favourite sort of style of formation, and generally just attacking. But I think that's just natural for all football fans that they like to see that sort of attacking formation.
It's not going to happen under Mourinho, though. Let's see if the football ever does come back.
Well, we'll see. It's early days, and he has been unfortunate with injuries, but yeah.
Cool. Penultimate question. Favourite season ever? Let's take this one. Andy Malcolm simply asked that. A quick shout out for his 7-year-old son, Alex, who started playing FPO in game week 30 to practice for next year. Apparently he still checks to see how he's doing, bless him. Very unlucky there, Alex, but hopefully next year you will be number one in the world. Our favourite season ever, guys. What do we reckon? Do you want to take this as an FPL thing or as a proper football thing?
I was going to take it as a football thing.
I guess it'd be the treble season for you.
Oh yeah, the treble season. I remember it so well. I was two. No, I think for me, it may well be that season that I mentioned earlier where United had the attack flowing on all cylinders. I don't think it was the year they won the Champions League. I think it was the year that they won the Premier League and FA Cup double, but lost the Champions League final to Barcelona. So I think if I remember correctly, that's 2008-2009, that was my favourite season.
So, I interpreted this actually as an FPL season as opposed to a favourite Premier League season. So I think in terms of FPL, and it's always going to be the two seasons that you did the best in. So for me, I think there's two seasons. One was the first season we did the pod, which was just a, you know, really fantastic season. Really enjoyed it. And, you know, the amount, you know, doing all the content for the pod and everything, it was just, you know, it was a great year. And then the other was a tough year in my life, but it was the year that I sort of fell in love with FPL. And I think we talked about it on the, you know, Get to Know Us pods, but, you know, that season when I sort of first fell in love with FPL and I was in hospital, but I ended up actually scoring my best overall rank of all time. And it was the season actually Harry Kane emerged from the scene, and I just, being a Spurs fan, I'd seen his Europa League performances, got on him early, and really paid dividends. In terms of actual non-FPL, it'd probably be Leicester won the league. It was a really good season for Spurs as well. So Spurs were, you know, absolutely fantastic performances. And you know, it was a Premier League winner that I felt like I could get behind, just because I'm not a fan of Manchester United or Arsenal or any of these other clubs winning the league. But with Leicester, it was like such an underdog story. It was so miraculous that, you know, I thought it was just a really, really good season for the Premier League as well, especially with, you know, all the detractors say only 2-3 clubs can win the Premier League, no other club can ever win it. So, you know, Leicester proved them all wrong, didn't they? So I thought that was a really good season.
Cool. No real surprises about mine. 2003, 2004. The Invincible season, basically, is my favourite proper season. And in terms of FPL, I think probably that the year that I had cancer as well was probably my favourite FPL year, because that was my highest finish. There you go. That was Leicester season as well, wasn't it? That was probably my best one. So there you go. Best ever season in FPL, worst year of my life. There you go. Right, and then the final question this week is Desert Island Discs. Hooray! So Techie FPL asks for our Desert Island Disc entries. This also probably touches on Kenny McDowell's question about 10 albums to be isolated with, but let's keep it to Desert Island Discs. I think I kind of prefer this question. So for those not familiar with it, it's a BBC Radio 4 kind of classic show where people go on to be interviewed about their life, and they'll also play 8 tracks that they like, plus also give one book and a luxury item that the idea of, obviously, as the name may suggest, is if you're stuck on Desert Island, these are the eight tracks or eight, I guess, music pieces or whatever you'd be stuck with, plus book and your luxury item. So what are you guys' Desert Island discs? Anthony, do you want to start?
Yeah, I've done my best to think us through, and I have managed to get 8 songs together anyway. I really enjoy Where the Streets Have No Name by U2, but to be honest, you could have taken quite a few other U2 songs and subbed them in there as well. City of Blinding Lights, Sunday Bloody Sunday would have all been on that. Then from Oasis, Champagne Supernova is probably my favourite of all their songs. Hurt, as covered by Johnny Cash, I always enjoyed. And Personal Jesus, not the Johnny Cash cover, but the Depeche Mode cover. I really enjoy that. There is a song called Mary Keane's Introduction. It is a song that has been basically an Irish musician did an interview with his then 80-something-year-old grandmother. And she was talking about her life growing up in County Clare. But he overlaid it on techno, and it came out as this absolutely brilliant bloody boffin tune that I love listening to it. It's such a good tune, and it kind of all comes together really well. His name is Dahi, by the way. That's Daithi. Joxer Goes to Stuttgart is a song I enjoy, Christy Moore song, but it's about Ireland going to Euro 88, and obviously before my time, but still a great tune and has a nice story to it. It's a funny one, but it's also a good one. Razor Light's song America kind of came out whilst I was kind of just discovering that music existed.
I'm alive, watching America.
that's the one. And like, anytime I think of that, it was on the very first album I ever owned. It was like, you know, those Now albums that used to come out. It was like Now 65 or something. And there it was. Like, I think it was the first tune. I was like, I love it. Yeah. And I've thrown in Don't Look Back in Anger here, the Oasis song as well. But I honestly, you could have give or taken quite a lot of U2 or Oasis songs in that category there. Book, I've gone for A Bridge Too Far, but honestly I could have picked any book. A Bridge Too Far is a book about the Battle of Arnhem during World War II by a guy called Cornelius Ryan. I really enjoyed it, and there's an awful lot of detail in it, so if I'm stuck on an island I might as well get really into the nitty-gritty detail of that book. And then a luxury item, it's nothing to do with the fact that I'm on an island and everything to do with just what I enjoy doing. I wouldn't mind having a boat just to be able to sail around this island.
Maybe a fishing rod.
Exactly. Fished the odd time.
I, as usual, I've misinterpreted slightly. I didn't read it properly. So when it came to 8 recordings, I actually picked out albums instead of singles. But I thought maybe I'll think off on top of my feet and name my favourite song on each one of those albums that I picked out. Because it's more fun that way. So I think its first album I picked out was Radiohead OK Computer. It's a sort of seminal album. It's probably one of my favourites, one of Tom's favourites as well. Probably the ultimate tune is probably Paranoid Android Tips the Karma Police. It's probably the best song. just absolutely fantastic anthem. Secondly, I've got, it's another one of mine and Tom's favourites, is Block Party's Weekend in the City. Just really grew up with that album. Just really, you know, means so much to me, that album. It's just like growing up and just everything. So I think I really, basically, that is like an album for me. It's not really a particular track that really sticks out. Maybe I actually really like one of the singles from it, but I probably really like Kreuzberg as a song. I just think a fantastic song, so maybe I'll pick that one out. And then I've picked that Stuffin' Stevens, Come and Feel the Illinois. Very much sort of going into your American indie music scene here. Another album that I really grew up with. Most of these albums actually came out in sort of a period of sort of 2003 to 2006, which just sort of those sort of key years for growing up before I sort of stopped listening to new music. And Chicago is just a fantastic song that everyone needs to listen to from that album. Then I've got The Shins, Inverted World. Anyone who's seen Garden State will know New Slang. You listen to this song and it will change your life. It's a classic quote. Tom knows it. You look perplexed, Anthony, but then we've got Arcade Fire, Funeral, another great album. The toss-up between Neighbourhood 2 and Neighbourhood 3, but I'd probably go for Neighbourhood 2 as the best song. And then going back in time a little bit, The Queen is Dead, The Smiths. Great, great album. And then probably, I suppose, There Is a Light That Never Goes Out. That's kind of the seminal anthem on that album. Black Holes and Revelations, going back into the 2004 theme for Muse, and probably Knights of Cydonia is just like a classic. If you've ever seen that song live, it's just absolutely banging. It's just such an amazing anthem for sort of a live gig, and I think Muse are probably one of the best live bands I've ever seen. I'd love to see them again at some point. And then just a switch of genres, I've gone for Outkast, Speaker Box, The Love Below, which is just a 40 song epic album. And a great one of that, and it's probably just pick a song, probably be Roses, just because it's a sort of classic single from the sort of the zeros from the rap era. So yeah, those are my records. For the book, I'd probably pick something I haven't read, something epic that I'm never gonna have time to read otherwise. So I've gone for War and Peace by Leo Tolstoy. Never read it, and probably should at some point in my life, so why not take it to my desert island. And then luxury item, I didn't think as practically as you. I just said I'll take my Nintendo Switch and play some games on it and keep me occupied for a significant period of time. So Thomas, your turn.
Cool. Oh, good. It's actually quite tough to borrow one of your lines, Nick, to do 8 songs that I really like, and also that don't just like expose me as being a really joyless person, because a lot of my music taste is really like kind of wailing indie. So I did have at the top of the list Hurt by Johnny Cash. And then
it's a great tune.
and that moved into Hold on Magnolia by Magnolia Electric Company, which not many people have heard of. It's an American country brand, and then these singers now are RIP sadly, but a fantastic song. Fake Empire / Karen at Liquor Store by my favorite band, The National. Song for Clay, off The Weekend in the City. That's probably my favorite Block Party song of all. Paranoid Android, I think, will probably make the cut. Maybe hit maybe that, or maybe No Surprises, which I've always harbored a bit of love for. Honorable Mentions didn't make it, but There Is a Light Never Goes Out, and Boys Don't Cry as well by The Cure. Also The Scientist by Coldplay, that has a particular resonance with me. I know it's a really cheesy song, but it was before they sold out, and has a particular place in my life, that particular song. A couple of other ones as well. Juicy by Notorious B.I.G. I used to be able to rap that whole thing, so I think if I was in Desert Island, I'd probably just make sure that I can rap it. I was planning at one point to rap it on the podcast. I told Sarah about it, and she was like, do not rap on the podcast, and she's probably right. I'd have to have a Frank Ocean song or two on this particular desert island, because I bloody love Frank Ocean outside of wailing indie. So I'd probably go with Bad Religion or Ivy. So I think my 8 probably be, I think I've named loads of songs there. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I've got 9 there, damn it. Fake Empire by National, Juicy by Notorious B.I.G., Hold on Magnolia by Magnolia Electric Company, Song for Clay by Block Party, The Scientist by Coldplay, Hurt by Cover by Johnny Cash, Paranoid Android by Radiohead, Bad Religion, Ivy, maybe Ivy by Frank Ocean, but yeah, it's very close. Book, if I can cheat, I taken F. Scott Fitzgerald compendium, so I can read all of that. I think that would be really, really good. But what sort of thing do people read when they're on things like this? Maybe something like the Bell Jar or something like that, taking into account what you said, Nick, about like taking time to read something that you wouldn't normally have read. So maybe that, or Down and Out in Paris, New York, something like that. I'd probably take with me. But yeah, a compendium of Scott Fitzgerald if I possibly could, if not just Great Gatsby or Tender as the Night. And the luxury item, I was thinking cigarettes. I don't smoke anymore. If I was on Desert Island, well, yeah, okay, why not? But then I realised if I'm on Desert Island with cigarettes, I won't have a lighter. So that's going to really suck. Oh, I wouldn't be sucking, I guess would actually be true. So maybe an inexhaustible e-cig would be my luxury item. Like I could just use the whole time I was there, because it means I wouldn't have to charge it or plug it in. It would never run out of battery and it would never run out of nicotine stuff. So maybe that would just keep me company. Very unhealthy, isn't it? Right, that's round it off there, I think.
Yeah, so I guess that's all those questions. Thanks very much for sending them in, guys. Just to say, of course, we are Who Got the Assist. You'll find the Twitter account at WGTA_FPL. You'll get Nick at WGTA_Nick. You'll find me, FPL Stag, at FPL Stag. We also have an Instagram account now, WGTA.FPL. We will be back next week and we will continue on into the ether, however long it takes us.
Cheers, guys, for listening. Stay safe, all.
Well, I'm not even sure if it's going to assist you to do anything. But yeah, the fact is, we will be back. Next week. I think after a while, we'll probably end up having to stagger this if it is that we're in for a long time. But yeah.
This becomes a meme review podcast.
Yeah, probably we'll have to come up with a bit more original. But yeah, cheers all.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist?
Sports Social Podcast Network.